हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So then, we were discussing how then to see these different aspects that connect them to the Lord, because what we're dealing with is we're dealing outside of basically the devotional mentality, because the devotional mentality will be that we're doing all the different aspects for Krishna, for His pleasure. So then naturally, you know, it will look in its more traditional form. The activities that are being done, basically in the activities and the situations in which the service is rendered. So, and we're dealing then outside this, that it would be something that we would be seen as gyan or as karma. Jnana, and whatever it is that is attracting us in this world, then these aspects, then when they are, dismantled, or no, what do you call it? Where you deconstructed. When they're deconstructed, then it starts to, you know, break down those attachments that we may have. Now, this deconstruction process then is, you're basically applying it. You can apply it anywhere, of course. But in this case, what we were discussing is where we're applying it to something that's not specifically, we're seeing it necessarily in line with Shastra or devotional activity or a pious activity. So then one is trying to bring this back into the devotional path by making that connection so that one will give up the attachment. Difficulty comes is that we're dealing with the Lord's internal potency. But if we say something is Krishna, that's a little bit more understandable. But the difficulty is when we're dealing with the internal potency, then because she is all Shakti, the Swarup Shakti, then she can function in everywhere. Just as Krishna can manifest in stone as the deity, so that whole process she is also part of, right? So it becomes, so Prabhupada mentions here in Bhagavatam 6.19.11, Mother Lakshmi is extremely difficult to understand because she is so powerful and that the jurisdiction of her power is difficult to overcome. Mother Lakshmi is represented in the material world as the external energy, but actually she is always the internal energy of the Lord. So she is always the internal, but she may manifest as the external, because it's all part of her jurisdiction. So these aspects, then, we have to understand, are being used in pursuance of devotion. Right? So that the endeavor is made, but the field that one is working in is not necessarily what we would call devotional. Does this make sense? Right? We have to remember, we're not discussing here. I mean, it is applicable in the natural unfolding of devotional activities. But at the same time, as we're trying to address what is not normal devotional activities, right? Because we're dealing with the mind. The psychology, generally psychology comes up because someone is not doing normal, right? If everybody is you know, by definition able to, you know, is satisfied, is able to interact with others properly, is properly situated, is endeavoring in activities that are according to their nature, getting nice results, everybody is happy in the interaction, would there be a need of the science of psychology? Right? Would there? No. Psychology is designed because people are crazy. And in that craziness, they're unable to function with other living entities. Right? That's the problem. So, therefore, we're looking at situations that aren't ideal in Krishna consciousness. Right? How to deal with that. Things that you can deal with in a practical, just devotional way, according to the philosophy, that's the best. So here you're dealing with ones that are not. So now in this, then we've connected this, so seeing it, then it becomes difficult because we don't think, well, this is necessarily a devotional element. Or if it's a devotional element, then, I mean, we see it in that way, then we think that it's fine. This activity is nice and devotional when it's not. The act of trying to see Krishna connected with it, that's devotional. Right? But the activity itself may have nothing to do with anything with devotion. Does that make sense? So that's why it's important to be able to make these distinctions, that you're trying to deal with the Lord's potency. You're starting with the external, which is where the point of attachment is, that the mind has been absorbed, and bring that back to where that's not happening anymore. Let me just check the... So by bringing that back, you're trying to transfer from these external forms into the internal forms. So that would mean a change in the field. Does that make sense? So the gross manifestation of our particular attachment, as it, we see it in connection to Krishna, that purification is there, then we try to bring it to higher and higher forms of, how do you say it? That would be devotionally, favorable. It would be favorable to Krishna. Does that make sense? We're starting off what's favorable for us, what we like. But where we have to end up is what's favorable for Krishna. Right? So we start from us, and then we try to move towards Krishna. So it's us and Krishna, but in the beginning the emphasis is us. You know, and in the end, the emphasis is Krishna, right? So it has to adjust like that. Does that make sense? So now, another aspect we have to be careful of in this is voidism, right? We've discussed a lot of about the impersonalism, in that the Vivartavad, then there's the understanding that there's no transformation. No, this is the way it is. And an illusion has covered it. Therefore, we're seeing it in this way. Right? There's an illusion. The illusion is our perception. What we're perceiving is not illusion, it's real. What's unreal about it, when we say the world's unreal or this, is our perception that is not connected to Krishna. That's unreal. Does that make sense? But it exists. Like that. Like if I take this rock here and say that this is very, very valuable, you know, I can go and, you know, buy Manhattan with this, right? I mean, they did it before, right, for $26, so I got a little more than that here, you know? So that's illusion. The rock exists. Right? Money exists. Or the concept of economics exists, Manhattan exists. But my connection of all this, the relationships I'm developing in this, that's illusion. Right? That's the illusory element. So, one thing in the performance of your duties, sir. Excuse me, we're addressing the cinematographers here. Because there's, in the Vivartavad, there's an illusion amongst cinematographers that because they have a camera, they are God, and they can do whatever they like. So you have to understand is that what's going on here is a relationship between someone speaking and those who are listening. So the efficiency of that is what should be seen. So if you want to document it, that's nice, we're very happy. But you have to do it without disturbing what's going on. Like you have a group of ladies there. Generally, even though it's more efficient to cut cross and you could probably step on a few, that would even shorten the distance by another half. I mean, you can go around the back. You know, because otherwise then they become disturbed when they lose it. Because I'm working on the, I would say, the collective mentality of what's there. There's a mood, there's a vibe. And as soon as it gets distracted, it throws off the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? Because if you do that, then you find that the best photographers, cinematographers I've seen, they're invisible. You don't see them. They come in, they get their shot, they leave. You don't know. The worst ones are the ones who are, because they have a camera, they're the center of the universe. Everyone's got to move and adjust and understand that this is saving it for prosperity. And generally, you never see their photographs or movies in that ever again. And so, but those ones, I remember once, it's in the BTG. It's a big double page in the BTG. Vishakha Mataji took it. She came in, 120 kids. She set them up in about 10-15 minutes. Okay, you guys sit here, you hear this and there like that. She went, sat down in the bushes, because that was the best angle on it, took two or three shots, done. And that picture is very prominent. Well, I remember others, they would come in and this and that and doing so many things you never see, because they disturb the mood. The trick is to be able to get in without being seen, get what you want, and that. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. Like we had one guy yesterday sitting here and then moving it around, taking the shots of everybody, and he's completely missing the point. So just on that, if you do that, then it works very nicely, and then you also, because you're not disturbing the devotees, you yourself are able to have a finer perception, because that's what's very important, is because you're trying to capture the moment, the interaction, you know, not document, you know, just the body sitting there. So the more subtle you are in understanding those relationships, the more you'll be able to see them and catch them. Does that make sense? Yeah. No, so it's an important thing, but it also has its place, because it can't disturb everybody else. Just like you can't say, okay, you can't take them. So that's also a disturbance. You go to the temple, they don't let you take pictures. So that balance between it then works very nicely, and then it's good. Like that. Okay, thank you.
Good instruction, Lewis. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So another thing that would come up in this is the voidism. See, means the impersonalism. Excuse me. Impersonalism will mean that we've taken it that it's an illusion, it doesn't exist. So we'll take that, you know, things are Maya, so we're taking the element, they don't exist. So in that Maya, then there's no, let's say, emotions are Maya. But they're only a Maya if there's an illusion about it. That there's an emotion, the emotion exists. The illusion is that what you value it, if it's not in connection to Krishna, that's the illusion. Does that make sense? People interact nicely, people become happy. So that happiness is not an illusion. If you think that's it, that's the supreme, that's the ultimate goal, that's an illusion. Does that make sense? So it's ultimate, if it's connected to Krishna, there's no illusion. If it's not, there is. So in this, then the tendency is throw out everything. Throw out the finite, throw out the emotions, throw out the relationships, throw out everything. Because those are the source of all these illusions. Right? But we're actually taking it factually that the illusion is not real. No, the illusion is real. Right? The illusion is that it's not connected to Krishna. Krishna is there. It's all going on. It's real. It's happening in live time. But we're not making the connection. That's the illusion. Right? So that definition is important. Then, on the other side is then not being able to see that you can separate the elements of the illusion and remove the illusion. Right? Because the idea is that they're interdependent. Right? The mind is contemplating the material energy, and then by becoming attracted or attachment, the material energy enters the mind. So then the idea is that if we separate this, then there'll be nothing. Right? That's voidism. So then there's the, you can't do it. It's not possible, because then where will we be? Where will our experience be? Because we're taking that our existence is that experience. Right? Does that make sense? So it's another subtlety that's there. Because we come up with these, right? God doesn't come up with these. God is not an impersonalist. God is not a voidist. He doesn't have these problems. Right? The energy can have these problems because it's dependent. Right? So you're connected to something else. So then cutting off that connection, that makes it spiritual somehow or another. Because spiritual means I become God. Right? The impersonalist means I become God. So God is independent. So if I cut off my attachment to something, then I am independent. I become God. Right? Or all this is going on, so therefore we're in illusion. I get rid of it all, because when I get rid of it, there'll be nothing. So then in that state of nothingness, there's nothing to disturb me, so I'll be happy. Does that make sense? So here then we have a discussion. Who was bringing this up? Oh, Devahuti. Then she is bringing up this point. Okay, page 44. In frustration, under the influence of passionate mental speculation, we worry our brains about how to negate the natural relationship of the energies of Lord and His consort. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3:27-17, Devahuti asks her transcendental son, Lord Kapila, a question very similar to the one the four Kumaras asked their father, Brahma. She too employs the word anyonya. Sri Devahuti inquired, "My dear Brahmana, does material nature ever give release to the spirit soul? Since one is attracted to the other eternally, how is their separation possible?" Yeah. Okay, then we saw before that Lord Hamsa regarded the inquiry of the four sages to be anarthaka, useless. In his purport to Devahuti's question, Srila Prabhupada writes, "This question asked by Devahuti of Kapiladev is more or less impelled by the philosophy of voidism. The voidists say that consciousness is the product of the combination of matter, and as soon as the consciousness is gone, the matter material combination dissolves, and therefore there is ultimately nothing but voidness. This absence of consciousness is called nirvana in Mayavad philosophy." Right. So we understand is that the consciousness is focused on the material energy. If we remove that, then that means the whole thing doesn't exist anymore. Right? Still, there's the element of the control and all that. So I keep myself involved just so that the material creation will exist, right? Our own existence. But, so, these elements are coming up. See, we're having Devahuti talking to Kapiladev, and we're having the four Kumaras speaking to Brahma. So the basically same aspects. That, how is it these are combined? Why is it it's combined? So, but it's not actually combined. And then the idea is that it is combined, so if we separate it, then everything will just dissolve. Does that make sense? So in both cases, what's missing here is seeing it's the Lord and His relationship with His energies. So that aspect of seeing the Lord with His energies, then this makes everything, how do you say, come into perspective, proper perspective. In this proper perspective, then you can actually deal with it in a progressive way. Otherwise, it's not progressive. Right? There'll be something used here, something will be just thrown out, or you say you can't function. It's just like, how you say, all this is just maya, you know, it's just illusion. You don't need all this. You don't need all these interactions with the family and all that. Just get spiritual. Just let's move forward. Why you're getting caught up in all this, says the, you know, Grihastha temple president on a stipend from the temple with insurance, with a house, with a car, telling the other people of the temple how they just got to, you know, surrender and give it all up. So what are we dealing with here? This is impersonalism. Right? Then those ones having been frustrated in going through that for so many years and being emotionally not satisfied and all these different things, not their security, they move out of the temple, they're in the community, and then they're saying, well, we're just being practical, we're just being real, you can't actually separate this from the other. It's not, you know, this is voidism. So, does that make sense why many times a day we're saying, you know, paschatya, I know, what is it? Nirvishesha shunya vadi paschatya desha. We're thinking, no, we're not Buddhists, we're not those big mayavadis, we're just practical, you know, people. Normal, ordinary, you know what I'm saying? But these are the points that actually distract us. This is where the mind actually becomes crazy. You know, does that make sense? The mind dealing with senses, sense objects, that's natural for the mind. That's what it does. Right? Or in the cliche, that's what it does best. Right? The point is then it's how we perceive it that makes it crazy or not. We have to remember the mind is dead matter. And it has a function. It has been empowered by the Lord's potencies to do. And so, it dealing with the senses, sense objects, you know, in other words, this the mind is dealing with all these different aspects. The working senses, the knowledge acquiring senses, the sense itself, and then the sense objects. So all that together basically is the whole field of activities. You just have to throw in the three modes of nature. Right, in polluted consciousness, bingo, you have the 24 elements. So it's all about the mind and it's dealing with the sense objects. Right? Sense is sense object. So that's just what it does. That's mechanics. So the problem's not the mind dealing with what it deals with. The problem is how we understand that. Does that make sense? That's the difficulty. So when our understanding is wrong, then the problem comes up. Then the craziness arises. Otherwise, before that, where is the craziness? Right? Mother Yashoda, does she have hands? Does she have legs? Like that? She have a voice? Right? You understand? She have eyes, nose, all those things? Yes. Are they interacting with sense objects? Yes. Are sound, touch, taste, smell, you know, and all these different things, are they there in her field of activities? Yes. Does she have a mind that's attracted and attached to Krishna? Yes. So what's the problem? There's no problem here, because she sees them all in connection with Krishna. So we're in the same position, but we're crazy. Why? Because we don't see a connection with Krishna. So therefore, from these elements of just, I'm the controller and enjoyer, and I just perform the activity and result, gain the results of this, of the karma, or these elements of jnana, you know, where I just see, oh, it's all illusion, or if I separate it, if I play with the illusion, then it'll all dissolve. So if I want it to dissolve, I do that. If I don't want it to dissolve, I'm very careful about it. Does that make sense? No, because we see is that the Buddhists do think they are the controllers. They say it in a very subtle way, but their contemplation, right? Everybody has their funny little contemplation to keep them busy. You know, the Christians, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin? You know, that one. And then their one is if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there to hear it, does it make any sound? Right? So that means you're in control, because I'm there, then sound happens, everything happens. The amazing thing is, why do they think a tree could fall if you're not there to see it? Does a tree actually fall if there's no one there to see it? You know what I'm saying? You could just keep going, you know. You know. it's just like the angels. How big are these angels? That's obvious, right? If it's a very big, you know, like the Jolly Green Giant, you know, one can't even dance on the head of the pin, right? You know, but if they're the size of protons, then a lot of them can dance on the head of the pin. So it all depends on your size. So they're not, you know, they're just not taking it far in the questions. Does that make sense? So we're catching what's going on here? So now to bring the mind to its natural state means trying to find an environment of goodness in which then the proper knowledge and understanding we can actually take away all these things that are actually disturbing us. Does that make sense? So therefore the process of devotional service is also the natural and perfect process of psychology that makes everybody sane. So even if you don't understand psychology, still it works if you follow the basic process. That makes sense. You had something? No. Okay. Just scratching. Okay. Okay. So then Kapila Dev then replies here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "One can get liberation by seriously discharging devotional service unto me, and thereby hearing for a long time about me or from me. By thus executing one's prescribed duties, there will be no reaction, and one will be freed from the contamination of matter." Srila Prabhupada comments, "The liberated soul is not affected, although he is in the material nature. Even the Supreme Personality of Godhead is supposed to be in association with material nature when he descends, but he is not affected. One has to act in such a way that in spite of being in the material nature, he is not affected by contamination. Although the lotus flower is in association with water, it does not mix with the water. Yajyartat karmano nyatra. All activities should be performed simply for yajna, or the satisfaction of Vishnu. Anything done otherwise without the satisfaction of Vishnu, or yajna, produces bondage. So here it is also prescribed by Kapila Muni, the one can transcend material entanglement by acting in Krishna consciousness, which means seriously engaging in devotional service. This serious devotional service can help by hearing for long periods of time. Chanting and hearing is the beginning of the process of devotional service." Okay, so now then, Srila Prabhupada adds another point from Bhagavatam 10.1.4. "Actually, chanting can be perfectly done by persons who are already liberated. But those who are not liberated?" Then he says, "Bhavavshadi." But it is the medicine of this material entanglement for being liberated. It is also medicine. When we are liberated, we'll chant and relish what is actually love of God. That is liberated. But even if we are not liberated, this will act as medicine to become liberated. So any stage, nivritta tarshared upagiyamanat. Those who are chanting, they'll be liberated. So here we're seeing is we're taking this point and bringing it to its best possible position, right? That of chanting. Because in that stage, then that chanting, you are dealing with the Lord, with His energy, in the perfect, proper situation, perfect balance. From this, then, there's no need of worrying about is it separated, is it illusion. None of these different things are important. You're just skipping all that. Right? Because why get involved in so many things if it's unnecessary? So then one is coming immediate to the point of devotional service, and which is centered on the point of chanting. When that's there, then everything is taken care of. So yajna is the process, right? We mentioned before is that when we're going down into this analyzing, you know, the Lord and His energies, how they're at work, what's the relationship within the finest point of our attachment, still the practical, working element is yajna. Because once you've, it means first step, of course, is to identify that there is some kind of attachment that's getting in the way of devotional progress. Right? Second stage is that we're going to actually identify it. Right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says when you identify, then you can work with it. So that identification, then we can now understand how to apply the philosophy to this situation. Having identified it, then one analyzes. Having analyzed, one sees what is the nature of the attachment. Because what the external form is there, that's one thing. That's the gross understanding. But why you're attached to that gross form, that's more important. Does that make sense? You know, somebody's attached to a car. Why they're attached to the car? Right? Somebody's attached to their car because it belonged to their father. So they're attached to the car. Right? Someone else is attached to the car because it's just practical. It gets them to work back, it's convenient, and they'd rather take the car than, you know, take the tram. You know, so like that. Another one is he's attached to the car because of prestige that he gets from having the car. Either nobody else has a car and he's the only one, you know, down in the slum that's got one. Right, so you know he's the dog that got all the 8 Academy Awards. Right, so that's why he likes his car. Right, so that's another. Someone else is that the prestige that it's a pretty snazzy car. So therefore, everybody notices. Wow, you know this dog's got this car. Right, so what is the reason it keeps changing? It's not necessarily the same for everybody. Does that make sense? So that's why the first thing is, it's the step is that there's an attachment and it's this car and it's getting in the way of something, some development. So then what is the nature of it? So having seen that, then it's a matter of seeing the Lord in it. Right? So the actual working principle then is that quality that he's attracted to. So having seen that quality, then he's seeing this form that is manifest through. So the quality is Krishna, the form then is Lakshmi. Right? Because that then is what is assisting that form. I mean that quality. The form is assisting the quality. Right? Because the quality is there. It manifests through this. You know what I'm saying? The man is very strong. Right? So, how you say? He can, you know, pick up, you know, a 300-pound barbell, okay? So then, but the strength is not dependent upon the barbell. But the barbell manifests his strength. You can identify his strength because of the barbell. Does that make sense? So the barbell technically is serving the here, in this way. But now, the perception of that, or dealing with that, then you're working with the senses. So as we were discussing in rasa, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is defined that in partiva rasa, means in other words, sensual rasa, then you're still dealing with the ashray and vishay, right? It means in other words, the Lord and the devotees. So the ashray is the one who is the shelter of that rasa. And then there is the one who is enjoying that interaction, the vishay. Does that make sense? So then, in here, that we see is, it's the sense object that is the masculine principle, is the vishay, right? And the ashray of that is the sense object. He gives the example of a rasgula. You have a rasgula, then we'll take it that I'm the enjoyer and the rasgula is the enjoyed. But that's our idea that I'm God. But in actuality, is this rasgula has so many aspects to it. But the tongue, it is the ashray of taste. And in taste specifically, so therefore when the tongue comes in contact with the rasgula, it draws from there then the element of taste. Right? And of that taste, then the sweetness. But it also has its shape, you know, it has texture, it has density. You know, you could also probably figure out, you know, what atoms and molecules are going on there. So many other things are there, right? So it draws that. So then the tongue being, in contact with that, that's service. That's why we can take prasad, we're rendering service. So those who say, no, you can't enjoy prasad, that's coming from a person who thinks they are God. Because they think, I am enjoying the prasad. No, you're serving the prasad, and you're being enjoyed by the prasad. You know what I'm saying? You go up to a little kid, you pat them on the head, and then they smile at you. Who's enjoying? Right? You're enjoying. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that when you taste the prasad and you go, this is nice, then Krishna as prasad is enjoying that interaction. You understand? Yeah, no, it is pretty far out. What's so amazing is how we have it so wrong in our idea of how this place is working. You know what I'm saying? It's basically 180 degrees because we're feminine, we're trying to be masculine. Right, so that's on the opposite side of that's 180 degrees of what it should be. So therefore, our perceptions and everything in this world is basically off in that way. Right? Does that make sense? Oh, just one second. Right. So does that make sense? So therefore, then the strength is there. The person is manifesting it through going there and picking up his barbells and the clean and jerk. We're seeing that and appreciating it. Okay? So, in other words, we're assisting Lakshmi as the barbells and the environment, you know, the guy's funny little, you know, how you say, bathing suit he wears, all these little bitty things, you know, the oil on, the little bit of sprayed water to make him look good, you know, all that. And then, you know, and then the strength. So we're, by appreciating what's going on there of the externals that Lakshmi has manifest, is assisting her in his service to Krishna as strength. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on. That's the yajna. So we perceive this, it becomes yajna, then we progress. So of all yajna, this is definitely not the best yajna. Right? Sit around and watch, you know, the, how you say, you know, the world championship, the weightlifting. That's not exactly what you call the perfection of, you know, the, you know, yajna. So the best is hearing and chanting. Of all forms of sacrifice, then this hearing and chanting is the best. So Prabhupada is taking the same principle, and she's dealing with this in the mood of Voidism, and Kapila Muni and Prabhupada are just taking it immediately up to what's the best form. So if you can work with that, why bother with this? But if despite the chanting, you're just still so attached to, you know, the world championship of weightlifting, then you have to understand that this is actually what's going on. And when you actually understand that, then you'll start to think, why am I sitting in front of this television watching this when I could be chanting? But until one understands that process, one will think it's something separate from Krishna, therefore something you can enjoy. Because if it's connected to Krishna, hard to enjoy, we have to serve. But if I can find something that's separate from Krishna, that I can enjoy. Right? So I remove that, you know, illusion, because it's actually Krishna. And I remove the voidism that, well, they have to be combined, and in that way, you know, then I enjoy it. Right? Then I come to the platform of proper Krishna consciousness and yajna. Now it's a matter of, as Rupa Goswami says, is it favorable to Krishna? Right, so how favorable is it, my going, wow, that guy really lifted a lot of weight there, an appreciation of all that. How much service is that being rendered? You know what I'm saying? Because you're dealing simply with the energies that is there. You're not dealing with Bhagavan. So when we say bhakti, that bhakti is the Bhagavan. Bhagavan is expanded as Paramatma and Brahman. But we don't have bhakti to Brahman or bhakti to Paramatma. It's bhakti to Bhagavan. Right? So that means if we actually want to take this expression further, we have to come to the point of Bhagavan. So then in Bhagavan, then Krishna has that strength. Now he manifests it. Why watch 300 kilos being picked up? Why not watch Govardhan Hill being picked up? Right? Govardhan Hill, you know, that I know of, is he's a yojin, no, 2 yojin is high, right? 16 miles high, right? Mount Everest, they say, is 1 mile, right? 8 kilometers. Okay, so 5 miles. Excuse me, 5 miles. So you're taking something half that size and picking it up on a pinky. You know what I'm saying? So that's strength. That's a little bit more than 300, you know, pounds or kilos or whatever the guys are pressing these days. Does that make sense? It's a bit more. So therefore, then that brings it there. This guy's strong, but Krishna's even stronger. So this is what, even if they see it there, what the gopis are working with. We'll say, oh, this is so intellectual, but the gopis do this like breathing. You know? It's just the tree is black, Krishna's black, and then they think of Krishna. Right? So that quality of blackness, that beauty, so it's manifest through the form of the tree, the blackness of the tree. Krishna's beauty and the blackness of that, that Lakshmi then manifests, that's going on. That's their relationship in this form. But then the highest form of that is then Krishna with the devotees. So then naturally, then that just transfers into this. Does that make sense? So this ability to take it and transform, in other words, it's transformed from that down to this. So it's just a matter of reversing the transformation and taking it back. But you can only reverse it if you understand what's going on. Right? Krishna is interacting with his internal potency. That's all that's going on in all the realms, even here. Right? But here, then, we don't see that. Therefore, it's illusion. It's Maya. In the spiritual world, they see it. Right? So they connect everything, and naturally, according to how they want to see Krishna, they're going to bring whatever they perceive in line with that. Does that make sense? So, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think that's complete. Okay, we'll get that. You got a question?
Maharaj, throughout this whole analysis, actually one can go narrowing down to different minor element analysis. So this is in this age, this is the Sankirtan Jaya. And this is the sacrifice everyone doing, everyone of us. Obviously, everything connected to Krishna is beneficial. Doesn't matter if one is completely polluted or whatever. But depending on how we take further the process of that connection to the name.
Okay.
The name came, as you mentioned, this is most important in chanting and so on. Besides also the Harina, and there is the individual. If we take this as the original therapy session, and I am chanting my names, I mean the names of the Lord, my japa, I had to also...
Chanting my name.
Yes.
You tried it. Did it work?
Still, I think I go.
Okay.
Just one night.
So, maybe you should try chanting Swadu.
But actually, that's analysis, self-analysis, that I'm God, I'm the center. And the name will give me all the spectrum that you just delineated also. The energies of the Lord arises or engaged in your service. And even from seeing the name of, you know, the different other abilities of the Lord. Because we are in the presence of Harinam Prabhu, whether we like it or not, through this analysis. So definitely, I can go to analyze, you know, like Prabhupada will open up this great mission that he had and say, yes, Brahma means Balaram, Brahmachandra. So if we elaborate on that, we can concentrate in this therapy session.
Oh, okay, in the chanting. Okay, the question is about in chanting, if you're applying that, then how does that, you know, how does that then work as therapy? It means that you're bringing the material consciousness to the transcendental platform. It means you're in touch with the Lord as Bhagavan when you're chanting the names, because it's directly Him. These other forms, then, you're going to see Him or not, because He is in the form, in some form, that then, like here, let's say we just take hardness, right? Then the stone is a nice manifestation of hardness, right? If it was, you know, whipped cream, it wouldn't necessarily be, we don't think of, you know, we don't measure that according as hard, it's generally softness. So then, that's there, but the manifestation of Bhagavan then is very hidden. While the holy name is direct. So then in that chanting, by being in that association, then we will be purified, uplifted, as long as we're careful about offenses and that we've gotten it from the proper source. So by that, in that purified state, then that will generate jnana and vairag. So that proper, so knowledge will come, detachment will come. With that proper knowledge and detachment, we can actually look at our situation better, our self-analysis. So it will be more progressive, it'll be easier. So this is the most direct way of dealing. You just chant, by that you'll have the qualification to deal with the material. Like that. In other words, Prabhupada mentions, we have our process, by the devotional process, then we become qualified to do all the material things. Materialists, and we can take up material activities that we may not be so qualified for, but because the method we're using by the devotional process is so much superior to anybody else's, even not being so qualified, we will become qualified. While the materialists, they, to get results, have to be very expert at the field of their qualification. Then only be recognized and they'll get the results, because their results are being seen in the material energy. Well, our results are being seen in the spiritual. So, therefore, even if it's not going so well, that the endeavor is being made with all attention and submission, then, and sincerity, it will give, we'll get the spiritual result. And with time, the material will come, because if Lakshmi is pleased in the spiritual form, why then she won't be pleased in the lower element of the material form? So therefore all that comes. So she'll only not manifest that if we're not going to connect it to Krishna. Because remember, we're serving that. So Lakshmi comes as facility, as money, as whatever it is that we need for our service. Now, if we understand that this is Lakshmi and is connected to Krishna, we can have unlimited. But at that point, that having more, we become proud, or we start to see it separate, then why she'll come? Right? So that's the whole thing, is that we get facility, things are coming, but it manifests nicely, like we see down on whatever it is, where were the devotees? I can't remember if it was in 26th Second Avenue or in San Diego, and I mean in San Francisco. But in any case, some hippie joined, he donated his bus. This bus had holes in the floor, no seats, nothing. When they took Prabhupada out for a drive, they had to actually take a chair and just stick it in the front, things like that. But Prabhupada, it's our bus. It's the first Hare Krishna bus. Right? Like that. And the devotees, you know, they're hippies, they're happy and all that, like that. Now, if that had been some very fancy bus, then it might not work for the mentality. And they might become proud and all these different things. Then the whole process of assisting the external manifestation in the quality of Krishna is lost. Does that make sense? So therefore, for us, it's dependent upon the devotional quality and that practice. While for the materialist, it's dependent upon their endeavor and their previous karma. Like that. So the devotees can become more expert. It just depends upon how much of a good medium of devotion they are. So to that degree, then one can have facility. Does that make sense? So it naturally then progresses. That here, just we'll start on it if you don't mind. Unless it will create a problem. The other half raised their hand first. Okay. No, it's been redirected. Yes. Yes.
Okay. You mentioned there that if we don't perform activities of service to Krishna, it's actually binding. So how does that mean that in impersonalists and the Buddhists and the mind bodies, even though they think that they're acting for liberation, they're actually further entangling themselves by their activities?
Yes, it means. The especially voidists, like, because there's nothing of any value there. Impersonalists, their process of getting liberation is the same as ours. In other words, devotional service is the process. you take an aspect of devotional service, remove it from the context of devotional service, it takes on a different nomenclature. So then, being freed from material the illusion of material entanglement, you know, being situated on the spiritual platform, that's called liberation. It's part of the devotional process. You become freed from material entanglement situated in Krishna. So it's part of the devotional process. If you remove just that part only from devotional service, then it's called impersonalism.
So, yeah, you understand? It's sort of connected to Krishna, so they do get some benefit.
They get benefit in that they may be on some state of liberated platform, but because it's temporary, technically it's not liberation. Madhvacharya makes the point that actual liberation is when the jiva is situated in his natural eternal relationship with Krishna. Right? That's real liberation. So Brahma-Bhuta is, we're at the platform that the impersonalists are, but we're situated in our relationship. Right? So that's actual liberation. Then we will take it a step further, that then of real liberation, the really real liberation, you know, the vastava vastu, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, is then when you come to the platform of prema. Because that place is eternal. The other one, you're situated in eternality. But it doesn't mean you're eternally situated there. Right? Because even from bhava, one can fall. Generally one won't, but one could. So even though you are situated the best that you can get in the liberated state, it's still not ideal. Prema is ideal. Does that make sense? So there is some benefit. That's why Shastra is important. Right? People were misusing the Shastra, so therefore then Buddhism was established. Right? Buddha took them away from the Vedas because Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra is the basis of everything. They are completely misconstruing that and saying it's there. So all of their activities are always going to be bad. So you have to take them away from there because they were using it for bad activities. So if you preach good, they'll say, no, but the Shastra says this. So you get rid of Shastra. Then if you get rid of Dharma, right, means that your Manamoy platform, the next one down is your Artha, is your Upadharma comes in. Then it's be nice, be good, that's more universal. Right? Varnashram, even though it's actually universal for the conditioned living entity, he may accept it or not. Right? But everybody, be good, be nice. Even a thief will take that. You know, amongst their community, you're supposed to be good, be nice. Right? So that makes it more universal. Then you can get them to accept, be good, be nice, be nonviolent, don't hurt others, you know, like this. But the problem is it's atheistic because, and there's no basis, because there's no Shastra. So then Mayavad is actually Buddhism. But it's brought in line that it can be explained through the Vedic scriptures. So you re-establish authority. Once that's established, then the Vaishnavacharyas come and show what's the proper way of dealing with the Shastra. Right? So actual impersonalism is the same as is part of our system because it's based on the Shastra. So it's not a misunderstanding, it's not a technically a perversion, anything. What it is a lack of full knowledge. We're talking Brahmavad, we're not talking Mayavad. They understand everything is Brahman, I am Brahman, but they're not saying that I'm God, I'm saying I'm Brahman, everything's Brahman. So they have no problem that Krishna is also Brahman. So they're not jealous of Krishna, not envious. The Kumaras in seeing Krishna, they don't mind going in front of Vishnu. They don't mind bowing down. That's the way you interact with this kind of Brahman. Just like if you're walking down the road, you walk around tree Brahman, right? You stay in the air Brahman, because tree Brahman and your walking Brahman don't go well together, right? So, therefore, you know, they can understand that in Brahman they're still very, and they're interacting. Does that make sense? So they don't mind. But the Mayavadis then, you know, they think they are God, so they won't go into a temple. They won't bow down because they're God. Why do they have to bow down to themselves? Right? They don't mind bowing down to their wife. But hey, you know, but they won't bow down to God. Right? So that's a problem. So that aspect of it, there are elements of it that are based on actual, real Brahmavad. But most of their stuff is useless. That's why it's said that Shankaracharya himself we can deal with. But his followers we have nothing to do with. Because Shankaracharya, what he's saying, he's speaking actual position of, you know, Shastra and everything like that. But he's in a hidden way presenting the proper thing. The external then looks like Mayavad. But his followers are, you know, sincere Mayavadis. So that's completely useless. So their commentaries and everything like that, we have nothing to do with. But we can deal with his original stuff. Because he does all kinds of fun stuff that they have no idea. He's written a book. I don't remember the name. He's written a book about Radha and Krishna's pastimes. And if you ask the Mayavadis, you know, I mean, the, you know, Sampradayic ones that are, well, you know, read, they will admit it's there. And they have no idea why he wrote it. Absolutely no idea. It just doesn't make any sense to them. You know, like that. So, you know, he does things like that, or establishing the worship. You know, they attribute the worship in Puri. You know, some of the things they're doing it to him. In, like, in Kerala, in Guruvayur, that worship is established by him. You know, they sing Gita Govinda, they do the processions. Very nice, elaborate worship there. Very unique. It's established by him. They're all Mayavadis there. All the Pajari, everybody. But it's all... So, they don't... So, we can see in there the real, you know, how you say... What do you call it? Not Slim Shady. Sadashiva, right? The real Sadashiva there as the devotee. Like that, but they can't. Does that make sense? So it's common in what we're dealing with. It's very common. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Is that your question or no? Okay, so then we'll end here
for the day.
No, I said we'll end here for the day. You're supposed to, in the beginning, ask a question. That it's left over. You know what I'm saying? It's like if you have something left over today from eating, then you eat it first thing in the morning. Right? Otherwise, it... No? Isn't that it? Okay. No, because classes were 10 minutes over. We can say, oh, when will we continue? What is the date? Still never worked that out. This is Friday the 27th, everyone goes on Parikram tomorrow, right? And then festival starts again on 6th, no? Isn't it? That, so that's all over. So then we can do, then 6th, we can start classes again. Because that's on a Friday. So then we can do 6th, 9th, 10th, and then 11th is going quarterly. So we actually only get in three more classes with this. Okay, so that's 6. Say again?
Shantipur Festival is on the 8th.
It's on the 8th, but I think that's on the weekend. Yeah, 8th is on Sunday, so we missed that. So it's 6th, 8th, 9th, and 10th. So 3 more classes.
Okay, so end here.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Shrila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jainatai Gaura Parimana ki.
This was wonderful class. Today we're surfing on the cutting edge.
Thank you. Okay. This is from?
This? For you. Offered to you.
Oh, and this?
This I make.
Okay.
Maharaj, I have a darshan schedule with you for 8 o'clock.
A darshan at 8 o'clock.
Yes, so I was wondering whether you wanted to meet now or whether you wanted to come back
at 8 o'clock. Yeah, because I have some other devotees.
Wonderful. When should I just wait for you here, or should I come upstairs?
At 8 o'clock, just come upstairs and see what's happening. And if you're free, then we'll talk. Then if not, then just leave out. In other words, you just come up and on the first floor here, just sit there. Otherwise, you can get
It's an important service.
No.
It's something you always have to be everywhere at all times. So learning that ability to be invisible gives it better shots. Finding those angles, and especially nowadays, modern cinematography is so understanding. Long shots, angles.